The best thing that I did was got in tune with where my value comes from. And kind of going back to like how I look at my kids and going back to who am I really? What is my value apart from all the stuff and the achievements and everything? And going back to who I actually am.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to another edition of How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs. Today, I have an old friend. We have known each other for many years, but ironically, we were trying to reconnect and we reconnected through a young lady in Pakistan of all places. Just the craziest story, which if we have time, we'll talk about it. Anyway, welcome to the show, Wayne. How are you today?
And I'm thrilled. Thank you for having me on.
Sweet. Well, as we always do, man, we love to give a ton of value. So let's jump right in. You've had quite the life. I know we've talked about your journey. So you had some major struggles back in 2010. What were the decisive moments that led to a turning point in your life and career at that time?
Man, I was at one of those points where probably some of us have been there, right? Everything on the outside looked good, but everything on the inside was in turmoil, right? Like, so the outside, I was like, you know, married, involved in my community, had the 2.5 kids, you know, the whole thing looked great on the outside. But on the inside, it was like in turmoil. And like, I was not in alignment. I had a bunch of limiting beliefs that weren't serving me, which you know better about probably than I'll ever know, right? But I had stuff that wasn't working. So ended up self-sabotaging and kind of doing one of those, like, you fulfill your own prophecy kind of thing. And totally screwed up my life, had an affair, messed everything up, like tanked my business to the point where I was laying on the floor of a vacant building and getting ready to take my life. So it's like, go big. I just went the wrong direction, went hard. So I was there getting ready to take my life. And I think that ties into so much of what we work is that in that moment, it was a big moment for me because I was getting there ready to take my life. And what hit me was like, nobody's coming to save you. Right? Like, it wasn't people didn't love or care about me, but like the only person on the planet that could have saved my life at that moment was me. Like, it became so clear to me that you can either check out or you can like show up for you. Like, you got to be the person that shows up for you in this moment. And like, you got to be the hero for yourself. And that led me to, I'll try it for a day. You know, I'll try it for 2 days. Even if it takes 10 years to get back up, maybe it'll be worth it. And it led me on that journey to figure out what caused all that, how to help people avoid that, how to help people recover from that, all that amazingness.
So Wayne, we know each other from our days at Keller Williams. When did you join Keller Williams?
So I joined a long time ago when they first came to Alaska and then left for a while and then came back after my rock bottom moment.
Okay. So you were with KW when you hit that rock bottom.
Yeah.
So yeah. You are now a completely different person, right? You would have been an ideal client for me back in 2010. When you did the deep dive, what did you unearth that led you to this pain and all this heartache and the bad decisions that you made?
Man, so much. I wish I would have had understood myself well enough to seek out help and stuff from someone like you back at that time. Most of it wasn't just like automatic epiphanies. A lot of this was kind of stuff I've discovered over the years, you know, doing my work and everything else. But a couple of them were, one of the big things was I had this belief from being a kid that if people really got to know me, they wouldn't love me.
Ooh.
Yeah. I was raised in kind of a, you know, my dad was a pastor and great, great parents, but very taught like when you're at church, you're on, right? When we're in front of people, like play the role, right? It was what I made up as a 5 or 6 year old, not necessarily what my parents were telling me. You know what I mean? But what I made up was like, man, if I play the role right, if I show up, if I perform, people will love me. But if they really get to know me, they'll check out. So that led to me kind of pushing people away before they really got in. The other big awareness I had was how my whole identity had basically become wrapped up in like how people saw me, what I had, the stats on the board, right? Like all the stuff that like, you know, it felt so important in that moment. And when all that went away, it's like, dude, there's nothing left, right? Like, I'm not selling a bunch of houses. My family's in shambles. Like, that was my entire value. Just walked out the door. I never really understood suicide until that moment. I think I got a glimpse and understand it so much better. I really felt in that moment that my kids and the world would be better off if I just checked out. I believed that. I think probably up until that moment, maybe I thought suicide was like the easy way or selfish or whatever. In that moment, it was like, I really believed like I was doing the right thing. Since I was doing a favor to everyone. Like, I'm a mess. I'm holding everybody else back. Like, just get out of the way.
Incredible. Man, so much to unpack. Like, we could talk for hours and hours just on this one subject that you just brought up. But I want to share something with you. What you went through, that learned behavior, you actually learned it. So if I am my real self, people won't love me. So your parents could have been great parents, But let's just give an example. Let's say that your mom didn't give you a cookie when you were 6 years old and you said, well, I hate you. She, because of her childhood, didn't know how to process her emotions. So she went in a tailspin. Dad got home. Dad was really mad at you. What do you say as a kid when you're 5 years old? Well, I was myself and I gave my emotions and what happened? Love was taken from me. A similar version of that is probably what happened to you and it happened to millions of Americans. We have this attachment. We need to be attached to our parents because they need to keep us alive, feed us, clothe us, right? And then we have this need to be our authentic self, someone who can follow our gut and tell our opinions. But as soon as we tell our opinions or emotions and we feel that it makes mom or dad mad, we're like, oh my God, we might lose attachment. So then we become someone different. And that's how many, many people live their whole lives. And what you just explained, all this stuff, the business falling apart and the extramarital affairs and all that stuff, like there was a reason for it. Like you take responsibility for it, but really it wasn't your fault until you had awareness, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I for sure didn't understand it as I was going through it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So take us back. You're laying on the floor about to commit suicide. You obviously didn't. What happened?
So one thing was I realized like, okay, the only person to say like, I have to be my own hero if I don't do this. It's hard for me to kind of rephrase. The question came to my mind of like, well, even if it took 20 years to recover, would it be worth sticking around? Like, would it be worth sticking around even if it took 20 or 30 years to like kind of get back up in a sense? And I somehow wrestled with that question. I thought, well, maybe it would be worth it if I, you know, even if it took a really long time, maybe it would be worth it. And there was kind of the decision of like, okay, I'm just going to do like the next right thing. And then I wish I could say like, yeah, the next day it got super easy. It didn't, but I just had that mentality of like, just do the next right thing, just do the next right thing. And I couldn't figure out, like, I couldn't see 20 steps ahead, but I could see like, okay, do this instead of this and just do the next right thing. And that was kind of the mantra that carried me through that time.
So as you're laying on the floor, literally contemplating taking your life, you just start thinking differently. You're like, well, no one's going to save me. I can either take my life. And then you just chose the path that we are all thankful for today. That's awesome. Wayne, how did you transition from seeking approval and identity in external achievements to finding your true worth within?
So I think I would be BSing you if I've said I've just arrived. If I said like, man, I never seek approval. Like it's never important to me what other people think. It is. Like I value what people think. And sometimes that does weigh on me. Yet the best thing that I did was got in tune with like where my value comes from. And kind of going back to like how I look at my kids and going back to who am I really? What is my value apart from all the stuff and the achievements and everything? And going back to who I actually am. So going back, as funny as it is, like my I am statements were critical to me, right? It's going like, I'm joy, I'm fun, I'm caring, I'm this. Like going back to those and just figure out, okay, who the heck I am without all the stuff, without anybody else. And so going back to that was really, really important for me. And then, you know, awareness in and of itself sometimes is transformational. So I think just the awareness too was really powerful. One of the things that was interesting was that I remember how I cared so much about what people thought. I got fired from places and lost business, all that other stuff because of people's opinions. And then like 6 months later, people were like, oh yeah, you did get divorced. And I was like, you were one of the ones that threw me under the bus 6 months ago. Nobody really cared, right? Like at the end of the day, right? Some people were just glad I was going through stuff they weren't going through, you know what? But I think it was just really having a lot more awareness and perception around that was huge.
So it's probably fear of judgment, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And as a child, you did something and you were probably unfairly or maybe not fairly judged. And that just stuck with you, right? So sure. Yeah, I put up a little slide on the screen. It says, all change begins with awareness. You cannot change what you're not aware of, right? And so many people, you, myself included, had no idea what was driving the behavior that we wanted to change. So until you find that out, you're going to struggle. So if you're listening to this and you're like, huh, I wonder if I have some of those attachment / authenticity issues from my childhood. If you want to find out, just go to bradchandler.com/quiz. And in 3 minutes, you're going to figure out if you've got these limiting beliefs that are affecting your marriage, your relationships, your kids' behavior, your business, your health, all of that. So go to bradchandler.com/quiz, take the quiz. You will not be disappointed. So what is the decision, the title of this, so we can't not talk about this. What is the decision that every leader must make to have the best year of their life?
I think there's several of them. It's interesting to ask people like, would you like this to be the best year of your life? And everybody's like, yeah, let's make it the best year of your life. I'm like, awesome. Do you think it's possible for it to be the best year of your life? People are like, yeah. I'm like, cool. What would it take? And then everybody gets really, really quiet because most people don't actually know what it would take for this to be the best year of their life, which is really interesting to me. You know what I mean? But here's the crazy thing about it. I ask them that question. And then if I really stay with her for a while, like if we really kind of sit there and get, you know, go after it and go into it, what's interesting is most people can't, like, well, actually, they can't articulate, but if we get really down to it, they start saying things along the lines of, it might be the best year of my life if it was like an easy year, or if like everything worked out this year, or if this was your, right? They start saying those, right? You've heard it, right? It's like, and here's the problem with that. This is not going to be the easiest year of your life. This hit me years ago. I was watching this commercial for a college, and it said like, hey, this is the best college ever. Show all these pictures. I'm making myself ancient here watching commercials. It said, most people say college is the best 4 years of their life. That's why you should come here. And I'm like, most people say college is the best 4 years of their life. Like, I want college to be good. Like, go have fun, do your thing, whatever. But if you live another 60, 80, 100 years and college was the pinnacle of your entire life, like, that breaks my heart. But for most people, like, they have the solution of like, it needs to be easy, it needs to be simple. And like, that's not going to happen. So I think the first decision is you got to recognize that for me, I'm sure you've done this 100 times in your podcast. Like, if I ask you right now, what are you most proud of? Like, for you, Brad, what are two things you're most proud of?
I mean, it's absolutely the awareness that I've had in the last 3 years that to figure out what drove my behavior for 47 years that didn't serve me.
So much of what you're proud of and what's brought you happiness has been you tackling really tough stuff.
Yeah.
And what I recognize is, and this, I think this is true for most people don't have it hard enough. What I mean by that is they haven't chosen the one or two things that they really want to tackle. Like, what are the problems they want to get after, right? You and I each kind of have problems that we'd love to tackle. And happiness is a byproduct of tackling really tough stuff and then doing what it takes to get better and go through that and everything else. So I think the first thing is like, this could be the best year of your life if you decide this isn't going to be a problem-free year, but it's going to be a year where I tackle some great problems. I'm proud of myself how I go through the problem. Happiness is the byproduct oftentimes of that. So I think the first decision a lot of leaders need to make is like, what problems do I want to tackle? You and I want to tackle humans that don't see their greatness or don't know how to tap into it, right? Like, that's a big problem, right? So I think that the first decision that a lot of people got to make is like, what's the problem that I want to go after and tackle? The byproduct of that is going to be happy. Does that make sense?
Oh, dude, that's really, really interesting and insightful. So you've got someone who's in a poor marriage. They go to work for 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. Then they go to the gym, but they don't spend 20 minutes a day or 20 minutes a week working on their marriage.
Right.
And to be the best year of your life, you've got to say, okay, well, my marriage has got to be one of the most important things in my life. So I'm going to take the tough steps to do what's going to take either fix my marriage or end my marriage.
Yeah.
So I will play devil's advocate and say that this year isn't going to be the easiest. It could be the easiest if you decide to do the work in the first month or two. So if you come and work with Wayne or you come and work with me and you go and you figure out these limiting beliefs that are causing your poor marriage and your poor health and your finances to go up and down, then it can be the best and the easiest year of your life. But you're right. You've got to take the step. You've got to say, I'm willing to change and I'm ready for it.
100%. One of the things I see a lot of is people suffering twice when they only needed to suffer once, right? So it's like, if you ever had to fire somebody, like you avoid them for like months or like it's going over and over in your head, or you have to call a tough client or whatever it is, there's all this suffering and then we still have to suffer. So it's like, you're saying just suffer once, like do the work right now instead of suffering and then eventually doing the work. Just choose to like lean into it and suffer once instead of suffer twice and make it way tougher than it needs to be.
Yeah. I mean, my first marriage, it was all her fault. It was all her fault. And so when I left and broke the marriage off, I think I did a Tony Robbins relationship thing because I'm like, I want a better relationship. But I didn't look at myself and say, hey, what did I bring to this? And what did I do? Very quickly thereafter, I started dating someone else and I got married again. Well, that's why in the United States, there's like a 50% first divorce rate. Second marriages is like 60. And the third divorce rate is a 70% because problem in relationships are never the actual relationship, or hardly ever. It's always the relationship we have with ourselves. Just like with you, Wayne. Your relationship with yourself was terrible because it had to be terrible to survive whatever you went through as a kid.
100%.
Yeah. Man, I love this stuff. So many of us struggle with this belief of being truly known would lead to rejection. You mentioned that earlier. How did you overcome this? And what's been the impact on your life and relationships since?
So I think one of the best things was, and I remember this years ago when I was teaching Bolt, and one of the things that I was, I can't remember who said it, but they said something along the lines of like, a perfect person never helped anybody else. Meaning, like, if I get on stage and everything's perfect in my life, I just land to the top of Success Mountain, like, that doesn't help anybody, right? Like, nobody can relate with that. What I realized was I don't have to be great at everything. I just need to be authentic about my journey, right? So I'd be teaching both. I'm like, hey, I'm nailing this. This not so much, but we all need to work on it, right? So coming to terms with just being me, meaning that's going to help some people. It's not going to be for everybody, and that's okay. So kind of dialing in my version of like radical unapologetic success, which means I had to determine what success actually meant for me and come to terms with what my therapist would call a two-sentence answer, and being able to just not needing to defend every decision, and is it not needing to justify everything, not knowing that everybody's going to be okay with it. But it took a while. It took reading books like Radical Acceptance, all those other ones, No More Mr. Nice Guy, lots of work on that to help me come to terms with how I was coping that wasn't really serving me.
Is that Tara Brach? Radical
Acceptance? Yes. Yeah. Such a good book.
Such a good book. It was one of my top books for a long, long, I mean, it's a phenomenal book. If you haven't read it, go get your hands on it. Tara Brach, B-R-A-C-H, Radical Acceptance. She has a couple books. She's actually local here in the DC market. So Wayne, how have those things impacted your life and relationships?
I think the big thing they've done is they've allowed me to speak, and I'm getting better and better. It's a constant work because I still have some fear of like, if I really voice my opinion, right? Sometimes I don't even know that I'm trying to play a role or trying to make somebody happy, right? So it's continual self-awareness. Yet the beautiful part of it is being able to speak what my needs are, right? Like, here I am, here's my need. And the coolest part about it, I think, is being so much more in connection with my clients, being able to like show my kids a healthy, authentic, like growing, evolving person. And then my relationships, I think being able to like speak my needs, met, have those understood, has been so huge.
Has that improved relationships for you?
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's improved them and it's helped them me clarify which ones were good and which ones weren't, right? So like it didn't improve all of them. It helped some come to a necessary ending.
Yeah.
And it improved a lot of other ones. Yeah.
For sure. Love it. So you have escaped death twice in your life. Let's talk a little bit about those experiences and how they've shaped you.
The very first one was when I was 17 and I was doing some relief work in Bolivia, actually. And we were climbing this mountain to go help some people. And there was this massive landslide. And I still don't know how I survived the thing. But I remember going through that. And as it was happening, kind of everything kind of slows down for a second. I had this thought like, hey, if I die right now, did I make any impact? It was like, did I do anything with my life? And that was kind of the first thing that jolted me. Like, I want to make an impact. I want to do something. I want to do something significant. I just want to float along. A couple of years later, I almost died again from having parasites all over. And I went through all this treatment. It's like, hey, this is going to kill you or kill them. Final step. And fortunately, I lived through that. So I've had a lot of clarifying experiences, which has been really good. I had a coach years ago who said, you can have a near-death experience or we can do coaching. He goes, the problem with the near-death experiences, can't always guarantee you're going to bring somebody back. So we went with the coaching route. But I think the perception or the perspective has been the greatest thing.
I want to hear more about the perspective. But first, like 17 years old, what I'm envisioning, because when we hear something, we always make a story in our head. Like, yeah. Are you on the side of a mountain and just the land starts and you are now like tumbling down the mountain with rocks and everything?
Or hiking the same. It's me and the other relief worker I'm with, and we're going up this mountain. Who knows why we're doing this in the manner we're doing it, right? But I'm just following his lead. We're literally going up this mountain, basically rock climbing up this thing, came to a real steep part, and then somehow a landslide started to go, right? So there's these huge boulders, you know, size of this big all the way to VW cars rolling down this mountain. And I just remember I was holding on to dear life to this rock, and things are hitting all around me, and nothing, I don't know how anything didn't hit me. It's just God, universe, whatever you want to call it. Like, I just remember holding on for dear life and just knowing this was the end and just that question coming through. And then getting to that, then after it kind of slowed down, get to the top of that mountain and sitting there and going like, I want to have a life that makes an impact. I want to figure out why I'm here and what I'm supposed to do with that. And then another big moment for me was years ago, I remember I was trying to figure out what am I supposed to do with my life? And I was sitting in my living room and I had all these books around me. And it was like 20 different books about your purpose in your life and finding your big why and all this kind of stuff. And they all had like pieces, but nobody like put the puzzle together. And I just remember how frustrating that was. But for me, what I uncovered going through a lot of different work was my purpose is to help people see their own greatness, like to expose people to their own greatness and then give them the tools to tap into it.
Mm.
Right. So that's what I feel like I'm here for. But it went through all that stuff to figure that out.
So now I get it. It wasn't a landslide in that you were like rolling down the hill. You're holding on to like a rock and there's rocks and boulders going over your head. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah.
One's going to hit me and this is it. At 17 though, to have that profound of a thought, like if I died today, would my life be worth it? That's pretty amazing. So take us to the near death with the parasites. Did you get to the point where you were so sick, like you were like close to dying?
I was. I'll spare you all the graphics. It was not pretty. But my friends called me Legion because I was mini. So I literally had like these things eating me from the inside out. And to the point where I would go through multiple different hospitals, and they eventually fly me to Toronto. And in Toronto, there's this big international disease center where like, hey, the worst of the worst, the funkiest of the funky, like you come here and this is the Hail Mary place. You know what I mean?
Wow.
I remember being there and they came in and I was basically ready to, they're like, hey, you don't have a whole lot left, right? They're literally eating you from the inside out. And they gave me this treatment and said, hey, this is the strongest stuff we can give anybody, but you need to know this is either going to kill you or it's going to kill them. That's the strength of what this thing is going through your body, right? Kind of like radiation for cancer in a sense, right? We're going to kill everything inside. And thank God it worked. And I was able to recover from that. But that was right there.
How old were you then?
I think it was 19 at that time.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And did you ever get to the point where you were so sick that you were like out of consciousness, like fading towards death? Or did it not get that to that level?
It didn't get that bad. But I knew that it was, you know, body start shutting down, all the things, jaundice and bleeding out of all the holes.
Wow.
And all the other kind of stuff going on. Yeah.
The previous podcast I did with this amazing woman, Deborah, she had a near-death experience and she was talking about being in the hospital and with her eyes closed, she was still able to see everything and she could actually see the words coming out of the people's mouth. It was pretty profound. So if you're into that stuff, go check out the last podcast episode. So back to the perspective, those two near-death experiences, how has it changed your perspective on the world?
I think the biggest thing that does is it helps you get really, really clear on what matters and what doesn't, at least for on an individual level, like what matters to me and what doesn't matter to me has been really, really huge. And I think the other thing it helps you realize is we really matter so little and so much at the exact same time. Three generations from now, nobody's going to remember my name, right? So our life is so insignificant. And at the same time, our life is so important based on, for me, who I impact and who I help and the legacy that leaves. So I think the awareness around it and the clarity on what's important, what's not important is, for me, that was the best part.
And what is important for you now?
For me, important now is being true to myself, being a great father, and then helping as many people as I can in the best way that I can see their own greatness and then be able to tap into it and live a life that they're actually really, really thrilled about.
That's awesome. So tell us, how do you help people find their greatness? What's a typical client look like? And you mentioned tools that you help them with. Talk us through some of that stuff. I'm interested to hear.
Yeah, I would say it's really personal development wrapped in the guise of business coaching. So a lot of people come to me for business coaching, right? They're like, I want to double my thing, you know, people, I want to grow my profits, all stuff, which we do. And yet, as you know, like so much of that is the person, like it's their stuff. That's the lid of that or keeping that stuff going on, or they keep attracting the wrong people because of them. So a lot of it ends up being personal development. But the cool thing is we have to figure out like, where do you actually want to go? It's so weird. It'd be interesting to see if you have this. Like people that call and they're like, I should be happy. I did the thing. I checked the boxes. Like I'm doing the thing. Like I have the life. Like I hate this. Like I'm not happy. I don't like who I am. I don't like whatever it is. So a big part is either helping tweak that or helping people figure out like, what do you actually want before we go out and build it? Like we'll help you build it, but let's figure out what you actually want first and why that's important. So I think going down into that is so critical. So don't build the ladder against the wrong wall.
Yeah, the gentleman who led me through my transformation, he was coaching like Fortune 500 CEOs and they're like, help me fix my company. And he would get in there and he'd be like, I can't do anything. The problem is between your two ears. If you want to fix your business, you've got to fix what's going on in your mind, which is similar back to what I was talking about with the relationships. The relationship you have that's bad with your wife, it doesn't really have to do with the relationship with your wife. It has to do with the relationship with yourself and how you think. And it's not your fault. It's just your brain trying to survive from all the unmet childhood needs and the scary times we went through as kids. So what are some tools that you give your clients to help them achieve this or become clear on what their greatness is or what they want to do?
I think that when you look at it, one of the greatest tools, it would be interesting to see if you agree with this. Like, I don't necessarily think there's a one size fits all. Like, I think the mind is pretty complicated. I think there's some patterns and some processes that we can do. Yet, I don't think there's just a one size fits all for everybody. You know what I mean? So really, it's going back to, I think for me, it's a lot of asking questions. I guess one of the best things about coaching, I think, is like people live in like a snow globe that's shaken up all the time, right? You ever feel like that? It's like you get up, it's like the phone, the music, the kids, you get in the car, we turn the radio. Like most people have the most brilliant thoughts when they're in the shower because it's like the one place they shut up for 5 minutes a week. You know what I mean? So I think a big part of coaching is like just letting people, like giving them a space, let the snow settle for a moment. and go like, all right, like, how do you feel about where you are? Like, oh, there's an opportunity there. I've been running in the wrong direction. Oh, this, it really isn't working, right? So like giving them an opportunity to do that and then asking them really, really powerful questions. I think coaching is a co-dance, and ask them really powerful, sometimes leading questions that help them uncover what was usually always there. We just need to uncover and give them, like, whether it's a schedule, whether it's questions. I remember I was coaching this one doctor, and one of the things that came up one week is he goes, I'm kind of embarrassed to bring this up. He goes, but I hate that I keep yelling at my wife. He's like, I yell way too much. I hate that. And the interesting thing, though, is like, he loved his wife. It's just that was the best strategy he had, right, to communicate in those moments. So he wasn't broken. His strategy sucked, right? So like, okay, what if we did this? So just giving him a framework for having another conversation, framework for dealing with his emotions as they flooded in. So I think that's where we look. It's like, I believe every frustration is an indication. So it's like, let's look at the frustrations and then let's do some deep dive prescription.
Yeah, I love it. I would say I agree with you on the one size doesn't fit all. But on the other hand, to use your client as an example, his yelling is something negative that he couldn't stop, right? And the reason he couldn't stop it was his body was thinking, or his mind was thinking, that it was protecting him. That yelling was protecting him from something that was even more painful. And the thing that's more painful is obviously, like, that is not a one size fits all. It's unique for each person. What's not unique is that every time you figure out that thing, it's just an untruth. It's an untruth that was formed in childhood. For you, the untruth was, if people find out who Wayne really is, they won't love him anymore. When you can show your brain that that's untrue, then whatever the negative symptom is, in your client's case, it was yelling at his wife, boom, it goes away because you don't have that trauma response. It's completely changed. So
good.
How could people find you, and what kind of people do you typically coach and help?
Yeah, so you can find us at theheronation.com or just Wayne Samuels at any of the platforms. People call when they want to stop fighting battles that other people have already won, right? So I think people call when they want to get where they want to go faster with fewer bruises. And that's what I love doing, helping great people collapse time, get where they want to go faster with fewer bruises along the way.
Love it. Well, Wayne, thank you so much for your time today. That was an awesome episode.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I love what you're doing. And I think that so many people, like you said, give yourself permission to go to the root cause, right? Like, I get on the phone with Brad. Get on the phone and do the work. Yeah, do the suffer once instead of just the continual suffering. It's a beautiful way to look at it.
Yeah, and we're only talking about hours. So that concludes another episode of How to Be Happy for Entrepreneurs. Remember, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people get rid of these self-limiting beliefs that are keeping them from ultimate freedom and happiness. So I need your help. So if you like this show, please share it, please rate it, please review it, anything you can do to help me spread this word, because if you're suffering, you don't have to suffer. Life wasn't made for suffering. Until next time, love heals all.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.